This is Truth Quest with Melody. I've got another great program lined up this evening. And I also want to mention that the programs are all archived at www.givemesometruth.info. Sometimes with life circumstances, I don't necessarily get them up within the next few days, but they will be up there, and I will have quite a number of archives there that you can go through when you peruse the site. And tonight I have Bill Davis and Shu Bartholomew. And Shu Bartholomew, I have had on the program in the past, and I just couldn't wait to get her back. It took me a little time to try and get this arranged, but she's there, and she brought a fine guest with her. So, and Shu Bartholomew has covered a lot of the HOA, condo associations, and a lot of good interviews around that. And her website is onthecommons.net, and she also has her own radio program. So, Shu, I want to say hi, and hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hello, Melody. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. And I, again, this is one subject that I just know that needs to be covered again and again and again, because many of us are in those associations, and I just don't feel it's been covered by the media correctly. But Shu, why don't you give us a little of your background, and if you have any, and about your radio program, and then we'll do the same with Bill.
Thank you, Melody. Yeah, I got involved with HOAs about 25 years ago, and it started in my own HOA. Not that I was victimized by the HOA at all, but I noticed that some of my neighbors were being harassed and abused, so I started asking questions, and I ended up on the board, and I ended up studying this stuff, and I ended up like, I cannot believe what's going on here. And somehow about 12, 13 years ago, for whatever reason, I ended up doing a radio show, and at the time, I had to sign a six-month contract, and I thought, will I ever find enough material to cover something different, you know, on a weekly basis for 6 months? Well, that was the old show. This is the new show that's in its 12th year, and I can't keep up with the stories that are coming out. The corruption, the dirty pool, the stories that are going on, the legislation, the lawsuits, it's unbelievable, and I'll be happy to cover as much as possible. And with me, I've got Bill Davis, and Bill's a great advocate as well. He is an attorney, but I'm going to let Bill introduce himself.
Well, my name is Bill Davis. I am a resident of Driftwood, Texas, and I've been involved in quite a bit of litigation the last several years with an HOA, as well as effectively a state legislator who profits from some of the the bad acts going on in these HOAs, and trying to limit his attempts to extend this to your state. So it's been a problem for quite some time. Gone up to the Texas State Legislature many times to try and rein this in, but it's kind of difficult when you got a legislator profiting from creating the problem.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, it isn't just the legislator. This goes down to the municipalities and
oh yeah,
So. There's a whole lot of things to look at. Once I got started on Shu's site, I know I've got a place to park myself for a while. Because
Melody, let me correct that. The archives are on .net, but my homepage is .com or .us. And there's litigation on there. There's a law library on there. There's all kinds of other information that you can get. So for your listeners, if you want stuff, now if you go to the Community Associations Institute, which is the industry representative, if you will, they'll have all the lawsuits on their websites, and those are the ones that associations have won. What I like to do is I like to put on the ones that the homeowners have won, because then it becomes someplace that the homeowners can go to and their attorneys, because finding, and Bill can talk to this, but finding an attorney who is not a member of the association industry who, A, is willing to take on your case, and B, knows a whole lot about HOA law, is like trying to find a needle in a haystack. It's extremely difficult.
Well, I've even talked to some of the realtors, and they'll tell you, you don't really want to take this sort of thing on.
Right.
Yeah, so.
I get calls from attorneys who say, you know, these are regular clients, and I've had them for years, and they're having problems with their association, and they want me to take the case. I don't know anything about this area of the law. I don't want to deal with this, but I can't turn them down. Here's the story. What do I do? Well, I'm not an attorney. I can't tell them what to do. But I can say, well, if you talk to my friends who are attorneys, I'm sure here's what they'll tell you. All right, Bill?
That's right.
So you sort of get them steered in the right direction, but they don't know. They don't know this area. So
well, in one of the archives that I was listening to earlier, had a Hanky. And he got in a little bit into the history of how these things got started. Would you like to get into that a little bit and see how they've, and then get into how they've kind of evolved into this other, I don't know if it's an other, but they have evolved from what I understand.
They have evolved. You know, the person who's credited with starting this is a guy by the name of Byron Hankey. And he worked for FHA back in the year dot back in the 60s, and he was a city planner, and this was after the war and after, you know, the economic boom had started and people had cars and they were moving out to the suburbs, and the suburbs were being built on the grid because it's so much easier to maintain and build the grid, and this did not please this particular city planner. So he went out to the suburbs and said to the local municipalities, well, why don't you have these little cul-de-sacs and these curvilinear streets? And they said, no, it's too expensive. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't we get the homeowners to pick up the tab? And if they do that, then it won't cost you any more. At first, they were sort of skeptical, but they approved the plan. And so HOA started being mass-produced at that point. And in 2010, now, bear in mind that when HOA started, the fees were being collected to provide the services that your property taxes normally provided. So the local municipality was still collecting the property taxes. They just weren't providing the services. In 2010, HOAs collected $40 billion, that's billion with a B, in annual assessment. So this, in addition to all the property taxes that Americans pay, if you live in an HOA, you have contributed to that $40 billion.
And so,
this
is a boon for these municipalities and counties, would it not be? And
the municipalities mandate them now. You can't buy without having to buy into an HOA.
But in the meantime, they come back to the homeowners or the people that in these cities and municipalities, whatever, and want them to fund these streets, and they've already been collected on, right?
Well, it depends. They've been collected on in the sense that if you live in a house that is not in an HOA, you're paying the same tax rate that someone who is in an HOA is paying. But those taxes will provide you with such things as streets and snow removal and trash removal in some cases and street lighting and parks and, you know, all of the recreational, all of the things that you sort of expect from a municipal government. If you are in an HOA, you're paying an additional fee. But unlike a city or unlike a municipality, if you don't pay this assessment, they can just come in and foreclose non-judicially to collect it. I mean, these associations have been given incredible powers.
One of the things that I, after our last interview that we had done, was the fact that you didn't have a lot of good things to say about these things by the time we were finished with the last.
See, I wonder why, Melody.
And Mr. Day and Bill, I bet you're probably of the same assumption, right?
Bill? Yeah, I have nothing nice to say about them.
No.
And you've been dealing with this for how long, Bill?
Well, I purchased property that was burdened by one in 2001. So I guess at least since 2001, although it didn't seem to be rearing its ugly head in 2001. I'd like to add one other thing to your point about not providing the services that are, the municipality's not providing the services, and that you're paying these assessments and things of this nature. A lot of these places have become the perpetual residual income stream for the developer, because what they'll do is they'll set up this scheme to where you're forced to purchase services that you do not want, do not need, and you're forced to purchase them from particular vendors, usually vendors that the developer has a self-serving financial arrangement with, and you'll find this in particular with respect to economically unregulated services. For example, internet services, telecom services, propane gas, in some places water. Electricity is an area this industry is trying to grab a hold of, where, see, the theory with deregulation is that, you know, they let the market choose. The consumer will choose the provider that provides the service to them, but what's happening is these HOAs are saying, oh, no, you have to pay whatever price the vendor charges, but we're going to tell you what vendor you have to use.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real problem in the area I live in, and it's a growing problem, I think,
in newer developments,
the FCC's been looking at this for, this bulk internet services, bulk cable services. These people aren't getting a discount. They're just all getting ripped off is what's happening.
No, but you're making it sound like there might be kickbacks going to the developer then, though, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So. I, there's not even a question about it.
Well, you got a little bit into the history, because from what I understand, Mr. Hanke, this seemed to be a concerted effort back in his era. And did he come from a government position?
Yeah, he was with the FHA. He was a city planner with an urban planner with the FHA, and he actually got leave to go around the country and convince municipalities and developers to try this HOA thing. And the idea was to make prettier streetscapes. Of course, now with the smart growth, we're going back to the grids, and we're tearing down all of this stuff, but HOAs stay. You know, increased density and all that, it's just so much simpler to put in the grids and never mind the nice meandering, curvilinear streetscapes and the cul-de-sacs and all that wasted land that people owned individually. Now we're just going to cram everybody in there, put everything back on the grid, and away we go. Because that's called smart growth now.
And one of the things that I was hearing in another interview that you had done was the fact that they didn't, Europe doesn't even allow them, these HOAs, right?
I had Jan, one of my guests said they weren't allowed, but they do have condominiums. And, you know, a lot of the European cities, the older cities, Paris, Geneva, London, they all have these, not so much high-rises, but they have these big apartment buildings. And they, for all intents and purposes, are condominiums. My sister lives in Switzerland, and what happens is they hire a manager to manage it. But if you own in one of those things, no matter where you are, when there's a meeting, you have to go, and the decision is made by the owners, not by a board, not by a manager, not by an industry, not by an attorney, but the actual owners get together, they sit down, and they discuss the issues, and they come up with a decision.
Now, is this related where you hear these stories about these places, like in New York City, where you have to go through an approval process to even get into some of these? That really sounds like something that really makes it tough and ought to really drive up the market there, I would figure. But one of the things that it seems that you had come out with is that the myth is that these associations bring, you know, hold up the property values, and you're saying no, they don't really.
No, they don't. But see, people are willing to buy into anything. They tell you you go to protect your property values. They don't. We're seeing HOAs go belly up. A lot of them. I mean, the embezzlement that's going on in these things is unbelievable. I think I sent you two articles. The latest on embezzlement. I mean, there are millions and millions and millions of dollars have been stolen from homeowners. There's no adult supervision anywhere. And the owners aren't allowed to look at anything. They don't know enough to ask for things. If they want to look at the books and records, they have to go to court to get a court order. There's nothing simple about it, and so most people don't do it. Okay. And the HOAs get away with it.
Okay, I don't know if it's on. It sounds like it's a little bit on. You got one of your twos in, but maybe like the phone has a cord might have something not having a good connection there. Is that a possibility? Although most people don't have cord on their phones anymore, but it was just cutting out quite a bit. So, and it's maybe on your end, Shu.
I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Shu,
me too.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was not coming through well enough on your end. I was sounding like your end was cutting out a little bit, Shu. That's why I was just wondering if you had a connection issue there, or if it.
There has been some static on my line for. I don't know if that's what's coming through.
I was hearing, so I was just asking. So I don't know if there's a way to alleviate it or not, or we'll just endure with it. Bill,
is this better?
I don't know yet. You'll have to talk more, and we'll find out.
Okay.
Bill, yep. your experience with this. How did you? You want to get in a little bit more into, you know, the aspects of your experience with these HOAs? I mean, you started out on how you got started, but.
Well, it's been pretty negative. In fact, I can't think of anything positive about it. It's just a mechanism to reach into your back pocket and take every single thing you've got. And the primary beneficiaries of this are the industry players, usually the attorneys and the management companies. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen anything positive about one of these organizations whatsoever. In fact, I think it's an unconstitutional tax to have this forward-looking assessment, this lien on your property into perpetuity that can never be paid off. I do want to take a little bit of a difference between, for example, a co-op, which I think you were sort of referencing in New York possibly, versus a condominium, versus HOA-burdened property, because they really are three very different structures, and condos really aren't the same. That's really kind of a different form of ownership as opposed to HOA. You know, that burdens traditional single-family homes that operated fine for, you know, many, many, many years without ever having to deal with an HOA. But we've just found, I'm not quite sure how to answer your question succinctly, but the management companies, you know, why do you think that the management companies lobby against homeowners having access to records, having the right to vote, having the right to run an election? Why is it this industry that talks about what great little democracies they are always oppose these fundamental, you know, things that you think would occur in a democracy? Why? why is that? Why is it that they should be able to dictate how your payments are going to be applied or how much they can charge you? Why is it that they say that HOAs preserve property values, but they never say for you? You know, they preserve value in your property for the vendors. Basically, with the events that happened in ours, we had a board that owned a private water utility and wanted to hold us hostage to their water utility. We had permission. We have the right to drill a well and basically opt out of this, get away from the developer's water company. And the developer controlled the HOA board and threatened us over these the possibility that we would drill a well. And frankly, there's been a huge battle in Texas over water rights. And I don't want to get off the HOA topic, but just Friday of last week, the Texas Supreme Court ruled that the groundwater belongs to the property owner. And so basically, you know, that we have a house and there's groundwater, meaning water under the ground, that we should be able to access. And yet the HOA is preventing us from accessing it. It's essentially being used to force us to have to purchase water from this private water utility. And Shu's got more experience with the homeowner-run one. Mine is a developer-run one. But I got to tell you, I think as a homeowner, as an individual homeowner, it really doesn't matter a whole lot which way it is, because you're just tired of someone else dictating what you can do with your property and just intruding on the most minuscule aspects of, you know, your use and enjoyment of your property.
Well, don't you also find, though, that with the I'm sure you're running into these international building codes, and if they're not implementing them, they're out there. And that is there an intersect between these building codes and what's happening, and what the these HOAs and other associations that dictate how you go about your lifestyle in your whatever type of abode you have? Do you have anything to say about that, or?
I don't think there's much of a connection. I think the international codes that you're talking about, and I know exactly the ones you're talking about, these are typically used by local governments, and they will, I've heard absolute horror stories from people, and these have nothing to do with the HOAs. And the government, that people will get a knock at the door, and someone will say, I'm from the fire department and I'm here to inspect something, and they walk in and take pictures, and that's the beginning of the end, basically, because they'll come in and make you make these repairs, and
it's, you don't see a relationship there.
they're different animals, horrendous, and they keep coming up with these new laws and, you know, all the time. But the HOAs kind of started out a little bit differently. Now, there's a bill, or there was a bill in Virginia, and I don't know how far it went, but this bill, I think it was killed. This bill would have allowed HOAs, notwithstanding what is in the governing documents, would have allowed boards to come onto private property and make repairs that they deemed necessary and then charge you. And if you don't pay, I mean, can you see where this would go? They would have the right and the authority to foreclose non-judicially. That means they don't even have to go to court and prove that you owe the money. They can come onto your property. They can say, all right, we're going to paint your front door because we don't like the color. They can bill you for it. And if you don't pay it, they can foreclose. They can sell your house on the courthouse steps without ever going to court, without ever going through all the hoops. It's then your duty, your job, to try and prove that they acted outside the scope of their authority. They didn't dot the I's, they didn't cross the T's. But, I mean, it's an absolute and utter nightmare. But these international codes that you're talking about, you know, these are a direct
correlation there. Even though they are different animals, I understand that.
No, but in terms of what they're doing, they're coming onto your property and doing all of that. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I testified. I went to a hearing recently here in Virginia, and I said that between the legislators and the industry, they've made an absolute mockery of hearth and home. And told them to basically back off. Because they, you know, in essence they have. I mean, look at the idiotic laws they keep promulgating. Look at all of the stupid things they're doing. And then this, yeah, this is the real, that's the government that's allowed to do that. But, yeah, I mean, the HOAs are supposed to be contractual relationships that you agreed to it. Now find me someone who understands that they're agreeing to allow the idiot next door to come into their property and do all that. You know, it just doesn't add up.
Right. And one of the things that came out from one of the interviews, too, was the fact that, and it might have been, I'm not sure if it was yours, Bill, or not, but it had to do with the fact that if these people assess these different fees and then these people, you know, go bankrupt or skip or whatever, then the whole association is stuck. And sometimes if say that one development had only built half of the homes, but apparently you could have a situation where the developer could have made a deal with the utility or service and have to pay for those that don't even exist. Is that?
Well, the laws are a little different states, but in Texas, there's no obligation, for example, for the developer to fund anything. And so the restrictive covenants they put in always, the HOA for the developer is a control and a liability shifting device. So what they do is they will control the HOA for an indeterminate period of time. It could be 5 years, it can be 60 years. You know, all the, quote, new urbanism type of places that you wouldn't really want to live in, those in Austin area, those have been set up for 60-year control by the developer. Okay, that's not, you know, how is that a homeowner association, you know? But the developer has no obligation to contribute a dime to the development. So what happens is when you have a lawsuit, for example, with the HOA in these cases, and this is happening in ours, when there's a judgment against the HOA, there's only one class of owners that has to pay. That's the homeowners, not the developer, even though they're both members of the HOA. One member controls, the other class of members is liable. And that creates all sorts of havoc. And So when I think you were talking about the banks foreclosing on some of these subdivisions, there's no obligation for the bank to fund anything. So now that's why this was never about, aesthetics or it's hard to express the words to describe what's going on in these places. Arizona's got tons of failed subdivisions. So does Nevada. There's a bunch of them in Texas, and I'm sure a lot of other states right now, too.
So when these subdivisions fail, then it falls on the homeowners within them? It doesn't get passed on to the municipalities, or is it threatened to be passed on to the municipalities?
Well, the municipalities, in my experience, you say that's a private issue. That's a civil issue between you and somebody else. That's the whole point. The HOA is to... the reason they do these planned communities is to avoid any liability. They want the tax dollars. They want their cash cow, but they're not providing any services, and they still want your tax dollars. And, in fact, in our situation where we had all the water problems, the county took the position that, we won't do anything to help, but if you don't have water connected to the house, we won't let you move into it. That was the county's position.
Okay, I want to state that I've got Shu Bartholomew, who has a website, archives, onthecommons.net, but you have on onthecommons.com and U.S., is that right?
It's onthecommons.us, but if you go to onthecommons.com, it will kick it over to U.S. But that's the homepage, and that's where you'll find a lot of lawsuits and a lot of other information.
Good information and interviews. And Bill Davis, do you have a website?
Well, I have one about the litigation in our actual HOA. It's called LaVentanaVista.com.
Okay. And so what would they find there?
Where would they find it?
No, what would they be finding there? Just strictly the litigation and what's been... I mean, is this like an ongoing nightmare?
Oh, yes, it's been going on for 6 years. I mean, the HOA has racked up around $600,000 in attorney's fees, and they've lost, and, they're going to try taking it up to the Supreme Court just to... avoid. I'd like to explain that control issue. We have a developer-controlled HOA. At any point in time, it could have stopped. It lost at each and every step of the way. Okay, now that it's lost, the trial court had assessed a judgment against the developer of, well, just in excess of $100,000. Just leave it at that. The developer is now filed its own suit against the HOA that it controls for indemnification. So basically, the HOA wants to have all of its attorney's fees and any judgment against it paid by the HOA. It's a member of the HOA. It controls the HOA, but only the homeowners have to fund the HOA. Does this sound right to you? I mean, you know, this is the sick, you know, inescapable circle that we're finding ourselves in. It's kind of crazy. If you don't mind, I'd like to touch on something that she was mentioning before about this non-judicial foreclosure. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, what's happened in Texas and a lot of other states, this industry and Community Associations Institute, I mean, this is a standard operating procedure wherever they can get away with it. They're vendors or the members of that organization. But in this state, what the attorneys would do and the management companies is they would try to usurp the board's control of the collection process. And, in fact, some of these management companies basically have this, you have to opt out. We provide services automatically unless you expressly opt out. But they're a little more than con men talking to, you know, board members who don't, you know, they've gone to them for advice. They're proclaiming to be experts in the field and this type of stuff. They often have no idea what these grifters are about to do. And what will happen is the attorneys in particular, you might get a homeowner that owed, there's a lot of these suits for under $300. The next thing you know, the homeowner is being threatened with foreclosure by the attorney. And, I mean, I can point you to a case in San Antonio where the attorney demanded $25,000 to not foreclose on the guy's house over $260. Okay? This is going on all over the place. These attorneys and the management companies, it's literally extortion, and it's going on all over the country. And because it's non-judicial foreclosure, they would try to put them into a payment plan. The money that the homeowner pays, this is, for the most part, off the books of the HOA. It goes to the attorney and the management company to pay them off before it goes to the HOA. So the management company and the attorney were never working for the benefit of their client. You know, it's amazing that they've been getting away with this for so many years, or that you haven't seen more attorneys disbarred and management companies, you know, put out of business for this practice. But this is standard operating procedure. They've been doing this for a long time in this state, and we just finally got some legislation that will hopefully rein in some of these unscrupulous practices. But I kid you not, there were attorneys that tried to get $25,000 out of the homeowner, and they would threaten the homeowner with the loss of that homeowner's house for an alleged debt to the HOA for under $300. No legitimate, they'll tell you that an HOA is a business. No legitimate business would have spent $25,000 chasing $300. It was all about a mechanism for the HOA attorneys and the HOA management companies to make a killing at the homeowner's expense. And I tell you what, you think that improves property values? You look in the subdivisions at some of these places have operated in and see what devastation that they've, you know, left behind. If you have a lot of equity in your property, which could be kind of hard today because, you know, those HOAs didn't preserve value like they kept promising, but you'll find that you're a target. And this is particularly true of senior citizens. You know, they tend frequently to have a lot more equity in the house and things like that. These people would be targets. Because if their house is foreclosed upon, you'll have another insider come and pick it up for pennies on the dollar. They will literally sell the house $300, $3,000, and walk with a $250,000, $300,000, or $1 million property.
How do these foreclosures like that are taking place with these bad mortgages affect these HOAs, do they?
If you're talking about, are you talking about like first lien foreclosures by a mortgage company or by the bank?
Yeah. Right.
Well, in some states, the HOA will have the industry has pushed what they call a super priority lien. where generally the HOA lien is a junior lien, meaning that a first lien or a senior lien will foreclose out any interest that the HOA has. So, for example, let's suppose the homeowner owed the HOA $600. When the lender forecloses on the house, that wipes out the HOA loses any security interest it has in the house to collect that $600. But in some states, I think Florida might be one of them, there's a super priority lien of, say, 6 to 9 months where they can collect up to 6 to 9 months from the first lien holder. And then, of course, once this starts and the first lien holder is on the hook for all the assessments. I'll bet you some of the banks aren't too happy with all these HOAs. If you look at all the foreclosed properties, and they're having to, you know, turn over money to these HOAs.
A lot of them in those states are not foreclosing because they're not going to end up with anything.
Yeah.
So they're leaving them in the HOA's hands.
Well, you know, one of the things that I could be way off base in this thought, but when I see some of these foreclosures, for whatever reasons, these banks get stuck with a lot of these, I could see where these third-party companies, however they're formed, could come in and be handling the rental and various other aspects, and that it could, you know, be to the benefit of the banks and benefit of these agencies, and could also hit up these associations or head up these associations. Or am I just making this up? And it's just way out there. In other words, I'm just saying that I can see down the road, if they have enough foreclosures, that they're going to have some other kind of creature kind of come out and start taking over the property management.
Some of these investors are moving in and just buying these properties, you know, pennies on the dollar. The problem is a lot of HOAs have adopted rules banning rentals. So you end up with all these vacant properties sitting there because you're not allowed to rent them out. People would rent them to have some place to live, but they're not allowed to do that because, heaven forbid, a renter's going to reduce property values, and we can't have that. So we'd rather have all these vacant properties sitting there, not doing anything, and then we'll have the HOAs whining because we've got all these properties and we're not collecting assessments, and of course they're going to up the assessments on the people who are there, and they can't afford to pay them, and you know it just becomes a vicious cycle. So you get these investors who come in, and they'll pick these units up. I hate to call them homes, but they pick up these units, and they can sit on them, and they're hoping that the market will change. And when it does, they plan on selling them and making a nice big profit.
Well, one of the
in the meantime, it's just getting to be an even bigger mess.
Well, another aspect that I've run across is sometimes it's the mortgage companies themselves that limit the amount of rentals that are in these condos to underwrite them, right?
Well, it's not so much. It's the secondary market, HOAs, FHA loans and VA loans and all of these Fannie and Freddie guidelines that say if you've got a certain percentage of or more of rentals in a complex, then you know, they're not going to give you loans. Well, if you can't get a loan,
that's for condos. That's for condominium ownership. That's not for
HOAs. Okay.
It is for some HOAs as well. If you've got a whole lot of rentals in there, they won't give you the loans. It's really hard to get them, and it's just certain government-backed loans. But if you're in the price range where you're going to be using the government loans, if you can't afford a conventional loan, you're going to go with an FHA mortgage, and you can't get it. It just makes things difficult.
Okay. So you wanted to cover – you had something that was going on in Las Vegas.
Oh, we got something going on in Nevada. I sent you some of those articles. I don't know if you had a chance to read them.
I was able to look at the headlines. I didn't get a chance to read them because I unfortunately they were at my home computer and not at my studio. But go ahead and you might want to approach this one.
Well, this is fun. This has been going on for a few years. Back in 2008, Bill? All of a sudden, headlines were that, you know, the FBI was investigating HOAs in Nevada. And, of course, I called Senator Mike Schneider and interviewed him, and I said, "Hey, Mike, what's going on?" And he says, "I don't know, but we got problems." And then nothing happened. And then, all of a sudden, after several years, all of a sudden, they started popping. And they've started, the stories just keep rolling out and rolling out all over the place. They've got 10 people that have plea bargains, and they're waiting to, help. But they're trying to get the top people now. The two people who supposedly are the top people, they have not been charged, and they're Nancy Kwan and Beezer. Who had a management? He was a developer actually. And what they discovered was that there's been this elaborate setup, and people have been outsiders have been sending in proxies, and they discovered that when the proxies came in from all over California, they happened to be sent from the same post office box or the same mail post office at the same time in one particular city, say LA. And all of these proxies arrived, and they all voted for certain people. Now, these people were conspiring with developers, and they were conspiring with attorneys, and they were going to just go absolutely out of control. The thing is, it's being done. The investigation's going on in Nevada, but those same things are happening in just about every state. There've been some all over the country. I had a couple of them in Arizona that I covered. There's a couple in Virginia that I've also, one of them I've actually covered. There have been some lawsuits where they go, and I think in the Northwest. But the list of crimes the FBI has investigated include conspirators paid straw buyers to buy properties within an HOA, engaged in a dirty campaign, including phony polling, hired private investigators to dig up dirt on candidates for the board. They rigged the balloting to ensure they prevailed on issues, stacked homeowner association boards with members involved in the conspiracy. They had lucrative legal work, and repair contracts were funneled to lawyers and companies associated. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of all of these things that these people have done.
So, are they holding them accountable? What?
Well, you know, there's been some talk about some of them paying fees, but I don't think it's going into the homeowners. I don't think it's going back to the homeowners who were robbed. I have no idea. Where are the fees going, Bill? They're not.
I honestly don't even remember, but that's the big complaint. The homeowners aren't getting anything. And the guilty pleas, where they have like 11, 12, 15 of them now, you know, the problem is there was almost no word for two or more years. All you heard about initially was that the FBI showed up, raided an attorney's office, or actually raided two offices of the attorney and a management company, and it's like, okay, you know something's up, but it's been very slow. All we know now is that they've gotten judges, policemen, attorneys, contractors. It just goes on and on, but everyone's still kind of waiting to hear, okay, when are you going to actually sentence them? Where's the money coming back to the homeowners who've been injured in this thing?
I guess what I want to say is, what's in it for them to do have such a network?
They control the board. If they control the board, they can get anything they want. And if you have a manager, the managers and the law firms typically work together, because if you hire a new management company to come in and manage, they'll go, oh, you know, there's this attorney, he's really, really good, and we really like working with him, and we'll get a lot of benefits by having, so they fire the old attorney. I mean, they're all in the same bag. I mean, it's the one and half a dozen to the other. You're not getting any great shakes with any of them. But anyway, along comes this new attorney, and they sit down and they go, and they start helping the board, rewriting governing documents, telling them what to do, how to do it. And it's in their best interest to have the dum-dums on the board. And if they're not total dummies, then the ones that are easily bought. But, you know, they don't really want someone like a Bill on there saying, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that. You know, anybody who has any inkling of what's going on or any idea or any smarts can, you know, they don't want them there. They don't want people asking embarrassing questions. They'll come up with they'll spoon feed all of this nonsense to the board members, and the board members just keep spewing it out. They're easier to control that way. The managers set up the elections. They're not, if you get someone who comes on and starts asking questions, they don't want them on the board. They're trouble. So they rig the elections. They'll throw out ballots. They'll play games with the proxy.
Gee, that sounds like something happening in regular government.
He who casts the vote determines nothing. He who counts it determines everything. And that's, the management companies want to preserve their contract with the HOA, and I guarantee you they're going to help determine the outcome of a lot of those elections the way that's favorable to them.
So what guy? How do these guys usually get paid on these management companies? Why would an HOA even want a management company?
Because they don't want to do the work. There's quite a bit of stuff, but in some associations, paperwork and billing and contractor supervision, and you've got homeowners who have regular jobs. You know, they can't do the work. Smaller HOA, sometimes the owners will do it. They're not, you know, there are problems there, too. There's a problem with the concept, you know. There's a real problem with this concept of cohabitation, if you will. It's sort of throwing everything in one pot, and, you know, if they don't like you, you get left behind. It's like a litter of baby animals, you know, the weakest ones get chucked out, and you get a few of the strong ones who sort of get everything, worm their way in. It's the same thing. I mean, it's not there's no adult supervision in this whole game at all.
So when these things were set up initially, have they changed much from their initial paper?
Oh, yeah.
And how's that?
Oh, yeah. They're much more powerful than they were. Infinitely more powerful than they were. You know, you get... In fact, I was talking to one of the founders of CAI, and he says to me, this is a few years ago, I'm talking to him, he says, I just ran across an association and their governing documents are all of one page. We need to fix that. I said, why? Why would you need to fix it? Now, I live in an HOA that's about 40 years old, and our governing documents are all of, you know, 5 or 6 pages long. Today, you get a phone book. You know, everything is covered. And the thing is that as long as it's in the governing documents and it's not illegal, it becomes part of a contractual agreement. And that's the way the law sees it.
So it's a commercial. So you're talking about it being a commercial entity in its own Right. Is that right?
I'm talking about what?
In other words, if you got it's under contract, it puts it into a commercial aspect. Or am I wrong?
Bill, you want to field this one? It's not really a commercial aspect.
I'm not sure if you're talking about the HOA or if you're talking about the restrictive covenants. I'm not quite sure what.
Well, okay. So you got. It seems to me like it kind of crosses over when you're talking about this, all this contractual things that take place that are signed. Does this become? I mean, because these things are so cut and dry and powerful, it seems like it goes outside of the purview of some of the normal judicial areas, and that's why some of them don't want to take it on, or maybe I'm just out to lunch on this. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to try and hit two things here because I'm still not quite sure what the question was exactly, but unfortunately, servitudes in many states are interpreted as contracts. They're not really contracts because none of the normal defenses that apply to a contract apply. And not only that, if you have an organization that can change the terms at any time, how is that mutual assent to anything? You know, basically, that's like saying your next-door neighbor can decide that they want to extend your car payment another 5 years. You know, since when was that their business? You know, that's why these aren't really contracts. They're known as servitudes for the most part of a property. Now, the HOA corporation itself, I've always been frustrated at the industry's continued it's a marketing gimmick to call these things associations because, unfortunately, people think that means a group of loosely knit group of people. You know, they confuse the issue between the corporation and the members of the corporation. And I can assure you that the HOA, the Homeowners Association, they're not really associations. They're corporations. They are separate legal.
So that makes
entities.
It a commercial, doesn't it? Doesn't it, a commercial of sorts?
Well, yes, there is a commercial. There's definitely a commercial aspect to it. And I tell you what, people wouldn't want to live under the reign of a community corporation. But that's why this industry focuses on association. They don't like to use the word corporation too much because association so conveniently confuses people. You know, when you say the association owns the clubhouse, there's people that believe that they own a percentage interest in the clubhouse. And that would be true if you're in a condo, but that's not true with HOAs.
Yeah.
Common areas for HOAs, they think that they own a part of it. That's not true in an HOA. That is true in a condo. There's no real such thing as common property in an HOA. That's another marketing gimmick. But the commercial part of it, yes, the HOA corporation is it's a person under the law. It's not a government, and it has no business having governmental, powers. It's a person like any other person. That's how the law sees it at any rate. And one other thing I wanted to touch base on real quick is you said when people sign these contracts, you know, in most states, and I'd say the vast majority of states, they don't sign these restrictive covenants. That's another myth. It's not you didn't sign it. You didn't, quote, agree to it. The land is simply burdened with it. It's kind of like if you bought a piece of property that had a toxic waste site on it, you didn't necessarily agree to that. You may have agreed to the sale of the property or the purchase of the property. You might not have even known about the restrictive covenants, and that's been a real problem in this state where people were buying property and had no idea that it had an HOA or that an HOA could be put on it after the fact. You know, we've got one of the things the industry has been pushing in virtually every state is the ability to come back through and impose an HOA on all the members of the association, all the property owners in the area, even those who would have never bought HOA property and they want nothing to do with it. That's happening that's happening all over the country.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. They're coming in. I hear from a lot of people. But I want to go back to what Bill said. The covenants, the restrictions are recorded in the land records, and by doing so, they serve as constructive notice, and it is the buyer is deemed to have the duty to do their due diligence and go to court and go through the land records and see if these properties are burdened by anything. And that's where you get your title searches as well when you buy a property. So the minute by buying this property, you allegedly know about the association. Of course, it doesn't mean that you know enough to go and look for it. It doesn't mean that you know enough to look at the title stuff that comes through at the settlement table, because you don't get that stuff until after you've signed it. But the very, by virtue of the fact that you have bought that property, the claim is that you have agreed to it, and it's a contractual relationship. Bill's absolutely correct. In order to have a real contract, there has to be a meeting of the minds. There has to be mutual agreement. You have to be able to negotiate, arm's length negotiations. None of that exists. It's a take it or leave it. You know, you either buy this or you don't buy it.
Another aspect that I've run across, too, is you're saying, like, they can be phone book size, you know.
Yeah.
What I would venture to say is most of these contractors probably don't draw these things up. They go and find somebody else's or find some other means that they don't have to pay the cost that would be involved in creating these documents. What would you say?
Some of the same attorneys create them. I mean, I know some of these attorneys, and they'll draft one. And if you go to court and you go through the land records and you pull out all of these covenants, and you read them, there's boilerplates for periods. So if you look at mine and you find another HOA that was built around the same time frame, you'll find that pretty much the same language exists. So you're right. They're just copied in. The names are changed and the dates are changed, and they just put them in different books and on different pages, and away we go. But over the years, with the legislation that's come along, it's enabling legislation that's come along, giving associations rights. And when these rights are granted, then all of a sudden these things are added to them. So over the years, you've gone from one page to 10 pages to, you know, a whole slew of them. One of the model developments in this country that a lot of this newer stuff is being based on is Celebration, Florida, the town that Disney built, the association that Disney built. Well, every time I go down to Orlando, I always make a point of going to Celebration and walking around. One thing, I mean, there's so many problems with that place. Like I could do a whole show on that. In fact, I have done a whole show on it. But when I went in, I actually looked at the property, and I walked in to one of the offices, and I asked them if there was an association there, and they said yes. I said, could I please have a copy of the covenants as recorded in the land records? Okay, now that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we don't have copies to hand out. And I said, well, how do I know if I want to buy one? Well, you put in a contract, we'll give you one. I said, yeah, but I want to know beforehand if I need to, you know, if I want to put in a contract, how do I get a copy of this? You don't have one. No, well, we can show you the restrictions. There are not very many restrictions, and so they proceed to pull out, I don't know, 20, 25 pages, mimeographed pages of, you know, thou shalt not. And I said, and they said, this is it. This is all there is. And I sort of looked at it, and I said, these are the governing documents as recorded in the land records, right? And they said, these are from the governing documents as recorded. I said, no, but I don't want them from. I want to see the actual recorded documents. They didn't have a copy in the office, or if they did, they weren't about to show it to me. And so then I decided to muddy the waters a little bit more, and I said, all right. I said, is there a CDD, a Community Development District? And they have these in Florida. It's an additional layer of government. And they said, yes. I said, what can you tell me about the CDD? And they pretty much kicked me out. They knew they did not want me buying a house there.
So do these CDDs kind of work like special districts?
Yeah, they are special districts.
Oh,
it's another taxing district, basically.
Well, you know, it would be better if they were a district, because a district has to actually, it's a political subdivision of the state, and yeah. It has governmental powers, but it also has constitutional restraints on its exercise of powers. And you don't have that with an HOA. It's a private corporation. It's not a government.
Well, the CDDs are a little different. They actually, what happens is the developers will buy the land and then they'll put up all of these common areas. And in Florida, they might have land that's just not, you know, they is undevelopable. So they'll sell it to the CDD that they set up for whatever price they decide they want to sell it to. And when they walk away, the homeowners then are left with a 30-year mortgage to pay off the debts that the developer left behind. And you know, because when you elect the board members for the CDD, you actually vote for them on the local municipal ballot. So if you live in a city, it'll be on the city ballot. If you live in a county, it'll be on the county ballot. And therefore, there's a degree of separation between the association. But, I mean, it's the same animal. It's just another layer. It's just a different taxing entity with different powers and things, and they just play these idiotic games. And the stuff, you know, the embezzlement that's gone on over there, the mismanagement, and the stories are just, they're never ending.
Yeah, and I hope we can get into a few of these stories if we can during this next hour. And I want to state, this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida. And my guest this evening is Shu Bartholomew and Bill Davis. And they're getting into the issues around the Homeowners Association and Condo Association. Are there some other associations that should be included in this?
Right. When Shu had mentioned before about basically the difficulty of getting copies of these documents, they like to say that they're there for you to protect property values, all this other type of stuff. If they were so great, why don't they want to put them out there for people to see? I'd like to read to you. This is the statutory notice requirement in Texas. Okay, I'm going to read an excerpt because the whole thing's a little longer, but this is what it says. Restrictive covenants governing the use and occupancy of the property and a dedicatory instrument governing the establishment, maintenance, and operation of this residential community have been or will be recorded in the real property records of the county in which the property is located. Now, you tell me how that puts anybody on notice. That's recording in the county clerk's office is supposed to be constructive notice. Okay, this isn't even constructive notice. Telling you that there may be one recorded at some point in the future in the county clerk's office, how is that providing any buyer with any kind of notice in this state? That's just ridiculous. And that's just shameful to call that notice of what you're buying and claim that you agreed to it when you bought in here.
No, I absolutely agree with you, Bill. I mean, that's absolutely horrible. And what by the way, Melody, if I may, what I recommend to people is if you buy a property that is not burdened with one of these, for God's sakes, record a covenant on your property that says this property shall never be part of a mandatory membership association.
So would protect them? That would protect them if they want to come in and put one of these down the road?
Yeah, because if it's there, it says that you can never put this property in an association. Because what they'll do is they'll come in and they'll tear down entire older neighborhoods, and they'll replace them with condominiums, with townhouses, with all kinds of things. So all of a sudden, right in the middle of this tract of land, you've got a house that's got a covenant on it that says you may not be part, this land will never be part of a mandatory membership association. Hello? They'll have to, even if they don't discover that until after they've built a high-rise, they will have to tear down that high-rise.
So you're finding, and I'm trying to remember how it was stated in one of the interviews, too, is that you're finding that these sort of things kind of really play into the pockets of the municipalities, and so that they kind of support these associations in any kind of new development? No?
No, No, they don't support the association. They mandate the association, but they have nothing to do with them. Absolutely nothing to do with them. You go to your local municipality, and they wash their hands of these things, but they force you into
Okay, that's what I meant, though, by support. I'm sorry. I didn't mean monetarily, but they do mandate them. So you're not seeing these people, unless they're already in neighborhoods that are just filling in, they're not as – that's about – the only way you're seeing them not do this?
I'm sorry. I don't understand the question.
Okay, so if you've got an older neighborhood and there's, you know, lots available and they build, is that about the only way you're going to get into something where these municipalities aren't going to mandate?
If you buy an existing house that's not in an HOA, then you are not part of an HOA. But what's happening in Texas that Bill was talking about is they've got actually have legislation that says that they may come in the future and impose one on you.
Yeah. The statement I read to you about the notice just shows you how ridiculous calling that notice is. But I can tell you, I can point to you to great examples. The city of Houston, they're planning site. The woman that heads up the Department of Planning is she's been a long time CAI supporter and Urban Land Institute supporter, and she pushes. She was trying to push legislation, I think, two sessions ago that would allow an HOA to annex neighboring property. Now you think about that: a private corporation is just going to decide that you have to pay assessments to it into perpetuity. You have very little say about it. And you'll have a lien on your house in perpetuity that can never be paid off. What kind of a sick idea is that? And in Houston, there's some legislation that allows them to come in and get people to sign a petition to create an HOA. And what's really ugly about this, they have one. There's two statutes. One allows the owners to opt out. Individual owners to opt out, and the other one does not. And City of Houston's trying to promote going into these neighborhoods and pushing these HOAs that people cannot opt out of. So you bought property that wasn't in an HOA. You never wanted to have anything to do with an HOA. And if you're not real careful, you may be in one anyway because of what the City of Houston's doing. And what they'll do, it's a petition process. So what they'll do is they'll take a petition, and they'll go around a subdivision, and they'll invite people, don't you want to beautify the neighborhood? You know, it's some ridiculous thing like, how could you say no to that? You know, why wouldn't you sign? These are con men. How could you say no, to the type of things that they're asking you to do? These people will sign a petition thinking it's some, resolution to keep the neighborhood beautiful. They have no idea. They just signed a petition to create or to burden their home and their neighbors' homes with an HOA. This is happening all over the place, and in fact, the City of Houston was trying to make it easier to do this than the petition process already exists, in the current state of the law. But there are examples like that going on in many, many states, like the Planned Community Acts that CAI has promoted, Planned Community Act or the, the Uniform Common Interest Ownership Act.
Common Ownership,
Right. They're promoting these, and these acts, one of the goals of these acts is to, make it so that your property can be converted into an involuntary membership HOA property without your consent.
I'm sorry, Bill, go on.
Well, that was it.
There's also this super neighborhood movement in Houston.
Yes.
Where they're going around, and it's not just an HOA, but what they're doing is they're saying, you need to become a super neighborhood.
Right.
And, of course, this super neighborhood, I'm not sure exactly what this super neighborhood's supposed to do, but somehow they end up in an HOA.
Right, right. Well, what's happening is the city that is taxing you and not providing you services is also refusing to talk to you. You are a natural person with the right to vote.
Yeah.
And in a lot of these cases, the people in Houston, in the city, they want to hear it from the HOA, because there's this false theory that the HOA represents the homeowners. Of course it doesn't. It represents the HOA corporation, which is not a natural person, has no right to vote, and at the best represents the interest of those that control its board. They do not represent the homeowners. And here you got homeowners that vote, pay taxes, and everything else. And the city elected officials won't listen to them. But Houston is trying to create these HOAs in order to offload all sorts of public services. You know, like the city's responsible for sidewalks and things of that nature. They're trying to keep taxing you, but to basically not provide a lot of these fundamental services.
Well, was it, again, and something else said on one of your interviews, to where some of these places, I don't know the tie-in exactly on how it came up, but where they were able to sell off some of the streets or to other entities and the upkeep. Do you know what I'm talking about, Shu?
No, I don't.
Okay. I think she's talking about privatizing what were government streets or public streets and things of that nature.
Okay.
Is that what you're talking about, privatization?
Yeah, and I mean, because what I'm seeing happen in a lot of these instances, it kind of goes full circle. It kind of feeds itself. You know, they go from you know, creating these entities that then, you know, are commercial entities, but then they turn around and sell these commercial entities off to other entities, and in the control of those that are involved in these things gets further and further away, and so that they can come back and foreclose on people, do all kinds of things so that these people lose their ability to even control the property at all that they've ever...
Right.
Huh?
Right.
Okay.
Correct. I think instead of selling, if you're talking about selling the HOA, they don't so much sell the HOA. Yeah. Is there this trading back and forth of the assets between the city
and
the HOAs? And one of the big things that the industry's been trying to do in a lot of these HOAs is get them to borrow money. Because, you know, when you look at it on paper, the homeowner, it's the HOA corporation that's liable. But because you have this, you know, these liens, effectively the HOA is using your house as security for all the debts that it incurs, and you have very little say about it. And, you know, in a lot of these places, keep in mind, there's no right to vote in the HOA. We have a real problem with declarant-controlled subdivisions where they can borrow huge amounts of money. This is very similar to the example you were talking about before. Borrow large amounts of money on behalf of the HOA. The only funder of the HOA has to be the homeowners, not the developer. The homeowners have no say where that money goes, and all of a sudden, all you know is the HOA has a big debt, and your home is the security for that debt. If you don't pay it, you lose your home. This is going on.
That's kind of the way it works in Texas, and I know that in Florida they have the CDDs, which is the same basic concept. It's just, you know, done a little bit differently, and they've got these, and in some states they call them special taxing districts, but it all boils down to the same thing where, you know, the developer basically loans the money or just leaves these debts with the homeowners to pay off 30-year mortgages for stuff. I mean, he'll sell off stuff and secure a mortgage, and then the homeowners come in, and they're responsible for getting that paid off. And if, for some, God help us, something happens, you can lose your house to pay off a debt that was incurred by someone else. See, people don't understand this. They'll go in and they'll say, oh, it's so pretty. It's got a big bathtub. It's got a jacuzzi bathtub, and it's going to protect my property values. And there's a gate up front, and it's secure, and I want to move in here. You know, if they're looking at the bells and whistles. They're not seeing the junk that's underneath them. They just absolutely...
You don't see the legal entanglement. You do not see the legal entanglement.
Yeah, they don't see what the structure that it's sitting on. I mean, legally, it's just horrendous.
Well, you know what I see this as is just another multi-layer I can't think of the word I want right now, but it's multi-layered on top of a system that is already in place in our own homes and districts already. Just, and then you throw in a special district on top of it, and then you throw in a historic district on top of it. Mm-hmm. Any of these could sink any of these homeowners or property owners. And mm-hmm. and so we just kind of find ourselves being buried under the legal aspects of these creations.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about the legal stuff, and Bill's touched a lot on the stuff that's out there that you hear a lot about. But believe it or not, there's stories that I hear. I hear from people who are terrified of going public with some of this stuff. The way that people are being robbed, it's not just the big stuff that grabs the headlines in the papers, but people are being robbed in little ways on a daily basis. They're being harassed, they're being abused, they're being threatened, they're being scared, they're trying to be gagged, you know. They tried it with Bill. He was sued, and he won that lawsuit, but he's not the only one. I mean, there's another one going on in Florida it's just incredible what's happening right now, and people don't know it.
One of the things that when we had talked about in the past is, you know, can you make changes to the paperwork, and is it worth your while to make changes to the paperwork of these covenants?
The only change that I'd like to see made is putting them on a bonfire. Mm-hmm. Bill, do you have any positive changes you want to make other than burning them?
Yeah, I'd like to amend them to set the termination date to be, you know, next week or something like that.
I just put the bloody things in the fire and just have a nice big bonfire. We'll have a party.
Now, have there been people that have tried to do such a thing?
I see no redeeming facts for HOAs whatsoever.
No.
There's nothing good in there for the homeowner. And
no.
If my show and if everything that I've done, if that's the one point that I can get across, I will be happy. I will feel like everything I've done's been worth it.
Well, how would you say that we could go about, I mean, those that are already in the midst of these things, what do you tell them to do? I know you can't do legal advice, but suggest they might consider doing or...
Well, you know, here the first thing is we've got, you know, there was Bill's lawsuit and we talked about it. I've got two lawsuits over here and the homeowner won both of them. And by the way, if you're entangled in something, get an attorney. I know it's hard to do, but get an attorney. Bill's an attorney, and the two lawsuits in Virginia that were won hugely by homeowners, both homeowners were attorneys, and they actually got attorneys as well. But knowing the law, they were able to work with their attorneys and make sure that all of the aspects were covered. But the first thing I tell people is read your documents. Read your documents and then read the law and find out whether the association is acting outside the scope of their authority. And in both of these cases in Virginia, the association had no authority to do what they did. And so the homeowners knew that. They put together their cases, they went to court, and they just absolutely devastated the association. In one case, the association had to pay, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. In one, it was not quite that much, but the case only went so much. But there's, you know, if I get transcripts, court documents, transcripts, I'll post them to my website so people can see them so they know what's going on and they understand what to do.
So to give you some idea, our lawsuit, just for our side, is about $600,000. The HOA, we believe, although we're not privy to the records of the HOA, we believe it's around $400,000. And then there's the developer, which we think they're probably $200,000 to $300,000 because they were basically operating through the HOA to get what they, you know, they were relying upon that to get what they want. And you start adding up, that's $1 million, and it's all over something the board never had any authority to do. But you have a problem with, you got people in these positions that are, you know, they're not personally liable for their actions because they got directors and officers liability insurance. They can use the resources of the entire HOA to fight you. The type of people that tend to be attracted to these positions have egos and other, you know, issues. They don't like to be told they're wrong or for people to say no. You know, whenever they want to dictate something, they expect you to jump, and how dare you say no, this is my property, you know, go back over to your own little hovel over there. You know, and so they have no qualms about trying to inflict as much economic pain as possible in these things. And they do. I mean, our lawsuit's been going on for 6 years, and I'm confident they're going to try appealing to the Supreme Court just to delay it, if for no other reason.
Now, Bill's talking about $1 million for him and his association. I know someone who's personally spent over $1 million in litigation in just her lawsuit.
Right. Well, ours isn't over yet.
Yours aren't over. Well, neither are hers, by the way, and that was a little over a year ago. So, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of money involved. And Bill was sued because they tried to shut him up. But he's not the only one. And for some reason, everybody sued for $1 million. I mean, that seems to be the damages that everyone claims. Attorneys, HOAs.
That's probably the limits of their insurance.
Oh, I don't know, Bill. I mean, if you're suing someone for defamation, you have to sue them for damages or for the actual damages, and it seems like everyone's actual damages seem to be the same.
Were you talking about the defamation case, or are you talking about the HOA case?
The defamation now. I know you've been involved with a couple of them.
Right.
So can you dissolve these things?
Yes.
And is it worth their while to do so?
I didn't quite hear
that question.
Can you dissolve the HOAs, and is it worth their while to do so?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. What about condos? Because you got a different creature there.
No.
That's a whole different story.
Yeah. That's a statutory form of ownership in every state. It's not a common law form of ownership, which means that it only exists as a result of statute. And to the best of my knowledge, I'm licensed in several states, but I'm not licensed in every state. And I can't speak to every state, but usually about the way you get rid of it is you have somebody that owns a certain threshold percentage, say like 75%, or you have 75% of the homeowners, and they can vote to get rid of it. And what will essentially happen is the place gets demolished, or it'll get sold to another organization, which essentially converts them into apartments.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you have different setups for, that are shared utilities or shared, you know, structure and that sort. So you're saying it can only pretty much just go through certain aspects of being apartments and or condos then. I mean, they can go back and forth from one or the other. Is that what you're saying here?
Or be demolished. That's okay. Pretty much all that can happen with condos. As far as, I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, every possibility. I can think of several examples right here in Texas where, you know, there's a case in Delaware where a investment company came in and acquired about 75% of the units, and then it told the other owners, well, they could either essentially, once you got 75%, the entity that had 75% could tell the other owners, we'll pay you X dollars for your unit, and if you don't accept that, we'll just dissolve the whole thing. You know, that's what, I mean, condos, I think Evan McKenzie has a wonderful statement on his website about how fragile this form of ownership is, and, you know, what a terrible financial strait most of them are in, that you never have any idea, you know, especially the newbies. And Fred Pilot, who's another person that participates a lot in these things, has pointed out that the typical condo buyer is a first-time or last-time buyer. And as a result, you have people because of the common ownership aspect of condos, it's a huge problem. I mean, you buy in a place and you have no idea you're facing a $10,000 or $20,000 assessment to help pay for a new roof on one of the other buildings, you know.
And this is, by the way, that $10,000 is peanuts. I've heard of special assessments in excess of $100,000, and then people are being foreclosed on if they don't have the money. They can't come up with $100,000 within a few, you know, a short time frame to help pay for this. They can lose their units.
Okay, so is. What type of...
Melody, you should be screaming, what?
Oh, I know, but what I'm trying to state here then is, can they have slush funds there, and then that makes them susceptible to other aspects, but if are they allowed to have funds set aside, and is there any kind of rule of thumb there, and is it even, again, is it a dangerous practice?
Well, you know, they are supposed to have reserve statements, and some states actually have legislation that requires an association to do a reserve study every so many years and to fund it. For instance, if you have a 20-year roof and you're on year 10, then you're going to have to replace it in 10 years. How much do they estimate it'll cost in 10 years? And they're going to have to put in the money over the next 10 years to fund that thing. Some homeowners feel very strongly that associations should not have any reserves.
Right.
And the reason for that is because of the embezzlement. Now, the association that I'm in was managed by a company, Coger, and they embezzled something like millions of dollars out of several associations, including mine. And so the homeowners are, you know, at odds about this. I think it's prudent to put money aside, but then I also think that you need some kind of adult supervision, because if you think that there's money missing, or for some reason you're paying into this and, you know, there's never enough money and the common areas aren't being taken care of and the grass isn't being mowed and all of that, and you go to your local police station and say, I suspect there's some funny business going on in my HOA, they'll tell you that's a private matter. Go hire an attorney and sue them. The governments mandate these things, but then they're not there to provide you with any kind of support.
So what are the best measures that these homeowners, condo association people could do to protect themselves?
Get educated, move. But then somebody else is going to have to move in, so that's not really a solution. But get educated. I mean, you really and truly have got to know more than everybody. Board members don't know what they're doing. Managers half the time don't know what they're doing. Attorneys, sometimes they do, sometimes. I mean, I've caught them at different, whether they're intentionally trying to mislead people or whether they actually really and truly didn't know. And if they really and truly didn't know, then shame on them, because this little housewife knew and made a point of knowing this stuff. So I think it's an area of your life that you cannot afford not to know what's going on. You have to know what's going on.
What if you have a situation where the association, somebody files suit and it, you know, they override the city or county's own building department? Do you run into this sort of thing where they might get approval to make changes or whatever to their home and a dispute arises? Where do you see? Who wins in these instances? Does the cities or counties back down? Do they, what? Are you familiar with anything like that?
Well, if there's a zoning requirement, you kind of have to go, you have to follow that. I mean, you still have to get zoning permissions, permits, and things to make any changes, but you have to also get it approved by the HOA. So if zoning says, yeah, it's perfectly okay for you to build another floor on top of, you know, a second story on your house, you've got zoning approval, but the HOA can come back and say, no, we don't give you that permission, and therefore you can't do it. So in this case, the association would win. If the association said, sure, go ahead, you know, that's going to increase property values, we're all for it, put another story on. And if zoning says, nope, you can't have anything higher than so much, and your second story would exceed that height limit, then zoning would win. Right, Bill?
Yes. I live in an unincorporated area of the county, so we don't really have
we don't have so many issues. Yeah,
right.
No, we do, because I live in Fairfax County, and you know, Fairfax has all of these zoning ordinances and all of these issues as well. So,
okay, now what do you?
Yeah, it kind of depends.
What do you say about I mean, if you don't dissolve, which I wasn't aware that you could go about dissolve. Well, in condos you can't; it would be harder. So, how would you deal with that in a condo association? Do you just lay down and try to do as little as you can as far as meetings and demands, or what?
And dissolving a condo?
Well, I don't know about dissolving it, but so that you don't have a lot of these issues crop up.
Well, look, if you live in a condo, you've got an investment there. It is your home.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a certain amount of money tied up. So, you can't really hide. You're going to have to deal with the issues. If you don't like the condo, then pretty much the only thing that's available to you is to sell and move. When you have real problems with the condo, economic problems, and a lot of condominiums right now are facing really, really tough economic problems, then, as Bill said, you know, what could happen is that the building would be torn down, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was talking about these investors coming in a while back and picking up these units for pennies on the dollar, they're sitting there in the hopes that either the economy will turn around and they'll be able to sell them and make a pretty penny, or alternatively, buy up enough of the units. And there was something in the news not too long ago in Florida, I believe, where one of these buildings, I mean, there were just a handful of people left in the building, three or four of them. And, you know, the guy who had bought them decided that the land was worth more than the building, and he was hoping that the others would leave. He'd buy them out and just sell the building and they'd tear it down. So it's kind of a disposable.
It's disposable housing.
It's absolutely disposable housing. But I want to go back to dissolving associations. Virtually all of the governing documents will contain a provision to dissolve the association, but trying to get to that is really difficult. I remember running into a story a number of years ago, and I'm not sure where this was, but all the homeowners got together and they all voted to dissolve the association. All but one. And this one person went to the local county, the Board of Supervisors meeting, and said that he did not think it was in the best interest of the entire community to be allowed to dissolve. And the staff recommended that the association not be allowed to dissolve because they thought it was better for the association. Now, mind you, everyone except for one person, everyone else wants to dissolve it. But the county staff and this one homeowner decided that, no, it was better for everyone else to keep the association, so the county would not allow them to dissolve it. The best way to get rid of these, but the thing is you don't actually get rid of them, is not run for the board, not collect money, not do anything. And that's okay in associations where you don't have any common areas that need to be taken care of.
Okay, but what as far as other than taking care of maintenance, I mean, because, you know, often that one person wants to do one thing, one person wants to do another, and then you get in these conflicts and discussions and feelings and egos and all this other things that can come out of this, and one way maybe to relax and not be so, you know, having to make everything match and things of this sort? Or does that have to still be in the documents?
It's in the documents. You don't have to enforce them. They may be enforced.
Okay.
But there's this fear that's put in by the attorneys. If you don't enforce them, you'll lose the right to enforce them, so you'd better enforce them. And let me write a letter, and oh, by the way, it's going to cost $500 for me to hit the print button on my computer. But don't worry about it, because we'll collect it from the homeowner.
So he's got kind of like a... you know, he's trying to put an undue influence in there that is in his favor. It isn't necessarily in their favor.
Absolutely.
Right. And do you run into these setups where there's a conflict of interest or an arm's length interest in some of these things, where these are being encouraged to be put in there, and then you're finding that maybe the company that does the my mind just went blank on the term you were using a while ago, the ones that administer these homeowners association upkeep and that like
management.
Do you run into issues where there are people that are pushing for these things and they go in certain directions and they're finding out that they've got an interest in them?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let me read something to you from one of the management companies run by a Texas senator, okay? Texas state senator. This was sent out to the homeowners. The covenant conditions and restrictions are written for a community before the community is built. Therefore, many covenants are too vague. It is within the board of directors' fiduciary duty, according to the government documents, to redefine these covenants and to impose fines for violators who will not cure the violations that fit the neighborhood. Okay, you have to understand, these companies profit from creating chaos. They like to talk about community and harmony and things, but that's completely at odds with how they make the money. The attorney isn't going to make a dime if there's no dispute. The management company is not going to, well, they make money from all the other things that they're doing, but they make more money by provoking disputes.
Uh-huh.
And so listen to what they just said. We can completely interpret these things any way we want to. We can come in here and fine you, even though there was no such things as fines in this neighborhood. And I still don't think that that's a legitimate thing for an HOA to be able to fine anybody for anything. What kind of planet these people come from? Listen to what they're telling everybody. We have the ability to interpret the restrictive covenants any way we want to because they're too vague, and we can fine you if you violate what we think that they say. These people aren't attorneys. They're not a court. They're a vendor, and they profit from accusations of violations, and that's the business that they're in. And then they shake down the homeowners,
yeah.
Okay? They would shake down the homeowners, threaten them with foreclosure through this fining process. And
so do you find a practice of these guys going, these sort of things going around and hitting these boards so that these type of things kind of erupt?
You mean, do they provoke disputes?
Well, you just said that they do provoke disputes, but are you finding a trend in these sort of things going from one association to another where these things take place?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. They have a, if you're talking about the management companies, they have a playbook they operate by, and the CAI, the Community Associations Institute, is the trade lobby group that virtually all of them belong to. And, you know, they'll have these public policies, which is nothing but pablum and PR for the most part, although some of their public policies are a little scary, like unlimited assessments, anything can be justified under aesthetics. Yes, you'll find that management company doing the same thing in this HOA as it's doing in the next HOA, the next HOA, and the next HOA. They do the same thing time and time again. When you hear it's an isolated instance, that's not true. It's ubiquitous. It's ubiquitous with virtually every one of these places.
An isolated incident number 6,322. we like to give them numbers. I want to just say a couple of things. If you go to my website on thecommons.com or US, That's the home page. You'll find a link to some transcripts. And what's interesting about those transcripts is that the attorney representing the HOA was arguing to the courts that these covenants were living documents and they didn't have to be taken verbatim, that, you know, they kind of moved with the times and the board could do pretty much what it wanted to with it. And I was in court when that was going on, and you should have seen the judge's face. He just went absolutely ballistic. I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
But you can read about that on your own. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, Bill was talking about the Community Associations Institute. I was lucky enough to go to one of their law seminars a couple of years ago. And one of the, they have continuing legal education that the attorneys have got to take. So they actually get credit for attending these seminars. And one of the sessions that was given to the attorneys for continuing legal education was how to treat the homeowners. And the homeowners, you think of the association as a family. And this is verbatim. You think of the association as a family. The board members are the parents. The homeowners are the children. You don't have to worry about them because they don't know what's good for them. The parents will tell them what's good for them, and the parents will make those decisions. So you just have to deal with the parents and ignore the children.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, do they have some kind of school to teach them how to do these condo association documents and these homeowner association documents, or is this something that people could school themselves in, or what, you know, is there like courses in this sort of thing or what?
Yeah, the industry gives the courses, right?
Right. I mean, if you're talking about establishing the documents, usually it's going to be an experienced land use attorney but one that specializes in this field, you know, creating master plan communities. You just didn't happen to know what the master plan was. Any movie I've ever seen or any story I've ever read, the master plan was always a bad thing for the typical everyday person. But, you know, master plan communities. Now, there are lots of attorneys that specialize that, and they've just gone more and more to where these documents that they write are designed to provide continuing returns to the attorneys after the developer is gone.
Well, you know, when you say the master plan, that makes me think of what's going on in a lot of these municipalities and other areas. I mean, it's kind of like this system recreates itself and gives itself some new names, and it just kind of multiplies and morphs for certain reasons, and yet we still have this basic structure that comes down to the local homeowner level. Do you follow what I'm saying here?
I think so. You mean about the
master committee? I'm seeing in a lot of these communities and municipalities that they come in with these master plans for, you know, their development. So it seems like we're seeing, you know, you have the small development of the little, you know, subdivision, and then you start seeing it on a bigger scale, and then you start seeing it on a bigger scale. And when you're talking about these smart growth cities or communities and urban development,
right,
there seems to be a thread of commonality there. No?
Well, the pattern I see in all of them is, if it's been anything done in the last couple of decades, the local government's going to make sure it's got an HOA with it, of one kind or another. And inside the cities, there's been a real push to redevelop a lot of downtown areas. At least that's what I'm seeing. I mean, maybe it's different where Shu or you are, but, you know, they're trying to put a condo on every open block. It's just kind of... Yeah. I see it as just a planned ghetto. I just can't believe that they're doing this to some of these downtown areas. But I don't know if that answers your question.
Who's going around selling these things to them? What is it? Why do they see that it's so advantageous to them is to change this these areas that already had, you know, something else established.
Because think about it, if you've got a house, a traditional house on a quarter or a third of an acre, it's only paying X number of taxes. Now, if you take down all of these houses and you replace it with a high-rise with 50 units, each unit paying all these taxes, all of these taxes are going into the county or the city coffers, and nothing is going out because now all of a sudden they don't have to provide you with anything. These older subdivisions where you actually, your taxes actually meant something, that's no longer the case. Now you've got a high rise. Now they don't have to deal with you because you have an association and you've got a board of directors, and if you have a problem, you go to them. And we have no parking because we're just building up and up and up and up and up. And after 911, I interviewed someone from the Urban Lands Institute, and I said, are we going to start rethinking these high towers that we're building? And he said, yeah, well, maybe, you know, we don't know. Maybe we should.
Think about the tax dollar density per square foot, because you're talking about a horizontal square foot. You're only taking up horizontal space, but sure. Let's suppose you're going up 20 floors. Okay, so now all of a sudden every square foot you've got, you know, floor one, floor two, floor three, but you've only got one square foot on the horizontal ground, the footprint. So you think about how many tax dollars are being collected for the same footprint when you're putting in a traditional condo type of thing. And by the way, the city, or if you're in a incorporated area, the city or whoever is providing the services only worries about connecting to you at the edge. They're no longer responsible for the individual homeowner. They only connect to the subdivision or to the edge of the condo. They don't actually provide the services all the way through, if that makes any sense.
Okay, so, but oftentimes these, I won't go there on that, but it's ultimately, then, are these municipal leadership getting schooled by somebody to tell them about all the advantages to this sort of thing?
Not just the city people, but also the realtors. Do you know who, you know, realtors and a lot of other licensed professionals actually have to take ongoing continuing education classes, okay? Well, I've seen some of the literature that, you know, the realtors get to pick classes and things to take, and sure, there's some accounting and there's some other, you know, like basic contract law and things like that, but they're also getting a bunch of I don't even know what to call it. It's just nothing but propaganda from the CAI in a course, and it, of course, it talks nothing but the virtues of HOAs. And when you start looking at this thing, it's like this is all a myth. So you've got the realtor who's supposed to be an expert who's doing nothing but hyping or repeating the propaganda that, you know, that
they've been fed.
And, you know, what is the home buyer supposed to know? They're relying upon a realtor or a buyer's or seller's agent or something along those lines. And I tell you, I was participating on an online forum for a while, and a few years ago, when somebody asked for non-HOA property, they would just get jumped on. I mean that figuratively, obviously, because it's an online forum, but they would just get attacked. These realtors would just attack them. Why would you want that? How could you possibly want that? HOAs preserve property values. And I thought, this is strange. The person asked for one fundamental feature. They don't want an HOA. That, you know, the world is open, but they want a property that's not an HOA, and they're getting attacked by realtors. And I always thought it was strange that these realtors, you know, you're worried about whether there's a fourth or a fifth room or a two-car garage or three-car garage. Why wouldn't you be worried? Why isn't it just as fair to worry about the legal entanglement that an HOA represents or the perpetual liens? Why is it so hard to find out whether the property is an HOA property or not property? But on this online forum, what's interesting is for a while, they would not allow any discussion about HOAs. The censors simply wouldn't allow any discussion about them because you were only allowed to say good things or nice things about HOAs. And there were so many people that had nothing but negative things to say. I mean, I can't think of anything positive to say about them. But if you didn't say a positive thing about an HOA, they would censor it. They would delete the post. They would do something like this. It's like this unwritten rule that you have to say only positive things about HOA and community. And they're nowadays you see a whole lot more posts on this forum about people looking for non-HOA property. So I gather from the change that there's a lot of people that are very unhappy with them. Plenty of people that only buy them once, that's for sure.
Okay, so if these things can go bankrupt, can they be sold?
Can the subdivision be sold?
Can the HOAs be sold?
The HOA is not really... The HOA is a corporation that burdens the property, and you can change who controls it. I wouldn't say that you can really sell the HOA, because...
Okay,
the
then
members,
who can take
the
over
the... own the properties are the involuntary members of the HOA. So your membership and theoretically the control of it is based upon who owns property in the subdivision.
Okay, so the, then they, I mean, you can get have a different...
You can change who has the controlling interest or the greatest allocation of votes, and that has definitely happened in a lot of places. Like the builder, the developer could have it for a long time, and then the developer goes under.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a lot of restrictive covenants around which says the developer controls it until so long as they own at least one lot. Okay, so I mean basically into perpetuity. There and there's a number of court cases around. I think Shoes may remember some from not that long ago where, you know, another company has controlled it for decades, and is never intends to give it up.
Okay, so you have okay. I guess I should have stated that differently. Not sold so much as somebody else coming in, and then somebody else can take it over and start changing how they implement the covenants and things, or start running up fees for...
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And that can be done by your own neighbors, too. I mean, that's
yeah.
the problem. That's what I was trying to say before. From the individual homeowner standpoint, it doesn't matter whether it's the developer controlling it or your other homeowners, and oftentimes the other homeowners are worse than the developer than the developer was. But absolutely, and in fact, these subdivisions where the banks have foreclosed on the developer, guess what? You can't do anything because the bank has not just a they have the unilateral power to change the restrictive covenants, and they also essentially control a majority of the votes, that you can't do anything. I mean, you have a you're like a minority control. It's like a closely held company where you have the minority share.
Ooh, that could be real sticky.
Yes.
So you still like this?
No, I don't like anything about it. But I just
they've been doing this artificially for years because in most places there's no right to vote. So if they didn't like you or didn't think your vote, or they can even look at your vote and decide whether to count it or not, because the ballots were largely secret, and they could simply decide, we're not going to count your vote, or we're not going to allow you to vote, or we're not going to count your ballot.
Okay,
and,
now, I'm going, I'm sorry.
That was pretty much it. So it's essentially, even if you're, you're a minority shareholder, no matter how you look at it, you're really at the whims of whoever's controlling the board, and you may not have any ability to change who's controlling that board.
Okay, what were you going to say, Shu?
Some states actually do provide for voting by the homeowners, but something happened in Texas some years ago where they ended up in court, and the manager, associations quite often will, one of the remedies that they have, or that at least they had in the older documents, was they can prevent you from voting or prevent you from doing something if you owed money. And so to control the elections, and this happened in Texas, Bill, and you may know the case.
Sure.
But they had the manager on the stand who testified that right before elections, she sent all these bogus violation notices to homeowners.
Right.
So they were in violation and wouldn't, their votes would not count. So she knew who would vote against the board member she wanted there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because the manager's contract is based upon keeping, you know, their people in power, largely. And she pointed it out. Many of these states, it's governed by a nonprofit, the nonprofit corporation law. But, you know, the nonprofit corporation law is kind of assuming that you're voluntarily choosing to be part of it, and that's what's so perverse about these. They're involuntary membership organizations. You mm-hmm. can't choose whether to be a member or not. But they would do several things. So they'd say, well, you're not a member in good standing if you're in violation of something. Well, this wasn't the court that determined these. These aren't lawyers interpreting these restrictive covenants. This is a management company simply declaring you to be in violation. Another stunt that they would use is to take the position that, well, dues are due on, you're not late until the 31st or the 30th of the month with respect to dues, but they're due on the 1st. And we're going to have the election on the 15th. If you haven't paid, if you didn't pay on the 1st, you're not a member in good standing, even though you've, you know, it's not late or anything until the 30th of the month. And so those people would be excluded. And this year in Texas, or last year, I think we're one of the few states now, although it was a pretty tough fight, that now says the HOA can't deny you the right to vote for a board member. But you still have the problem that the allocation of vote issues, where there can be multiple classes of homeowners, and, you know, you can deny an entire class any right to have a say whatsoever.
So is there any state that's better than any of them in their the laws that they have set up to No.
I think every law that comes along on the surface, sometimes initially anyway, they sound good, but ultimately they're tweaked and they are used in such a way that it never fails. The homeowner's always screwed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of these acts that purport to prevent something actually end up being an enabling act for even worse behavior, because there always see something in there that says notwithstanding the above, or that has a line in there that says that the HOA can do this, you know, regardless of whether the Texas religious display statute is a good example. This past year, you know, there was a Jewish families in a condominium in Houston were being essentially terrorized and harassed over having a mezuzah, okay? And this was a normal vertical condo, meaning, you know, it's a building, you had a doorway, doors. So what the act did is it said you can't deny somebody the right to display, to a religious display, so long as it's confined to the door or the doorway. I'm kind of paraphrasing here, I don't remember it exactly. But if it's, and it's 25 square inches or less, just so you know, 25 square inches is about the size of a quarter sheet of paper, of 8.5 by 11 paper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not very big. And that's what the surface area of the piece is limited to being. Okay, but if it's not limited, if it doesn't meet those constraints, then the HOA or its managing agent is permitted to go in and forcibly remove it. Now they made that applicable to both condos and HOAs. Now think about that for a second. So if you have what's a good example, Shu? The religious display in your front yard. In an HOA, even though the HOA, you couldn't possibly put it on your doorway or anything like that. I live on 2.5 acres, or actually a little more than that. So why should an HOA be empowered to come onto my property and remove what some would consider a religious display, depending upon what religion you're, favoring? Why would they suddenly be empowered to come in and forcibly remove that from my property, when before they couldn't do it at all? That's what that act did.
Uh-huh.
And you're gonna hear stories about them doing it. I guarantee it, because they inevitably will.
Yeah, a lot of them will have the statues, you know, the religious statues.
So, in other words, the corruption that is prevalent in our country right now comes down to these as well, because they've never seen a law they couldn't work away their way around.
Well, the thing is, most homeowners don't know that. And we had an attorney who said, go ahead to the board, do what you want to do, because homeowners won't avail themselves of their rights. And if they do, you can always make a decision based on the economics of the situation.
Right.
That's a direct quote. So in other words, do what you want to do. And if some homeowner is smart enough to figure out that you're acting ultra vires outside the scope of your authority, and they threaten to sue you, if it's going to cost a lot of money, then back down. And if it isn't, you know, just bulldoze your way through that. Pretty much. That's the advice that board members get.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I guess we need to wind down here, and maybe some aid. I mean, I definitely have the opinion of both of you that these are not good things for for anybody. And
whatever gave you that idea, Melody.
Yeah, we didn't even hit the transfer fees or the management company indemnification requirements.
Well, hey, do that. Do that. We've got a few
minutes.
Got
going on, or the banking schemes, or, you know. We didn't even have hit the bad things.
Well, you could say any of them. We got a few minutes left here.
It's going to take more than a few minutes. No, there's a lot going on. But I thank you for bringing this to the attention of your listeners, Melody.
And
usually my listeners, they're the ones who are having problems.
Well, I'm sure if it's across the country, then I'm sure plenty of us are going through some form or fashion of it, and if they haven't come in conflict with it yet, I'm sure they're going to come in conflict with it down the road, because there's always somebody that comes in and decides they want to be a condo Nazi or a HOA Nazi. So
they're going to improve property values by making it an absolutely miserable place for everybody else to live in.
That's true. If it hurts, it's got to be good for you, right?
So again, Ed, you do want to give your websites again, and I want to thank you again, Shu Bartholomew and Bill Davis. Bill, your website is
LaVentanaVista.com. It means the window. It's kind of a play on words, but LaVentanaVista.com.
Okay, and Shu again?
OnTheCommons.com.
And when is your radio program?
As they're archived, it's supposed to be on Saturdays, but as I haven't been doing it lately, but I've got a couple of them scheduled, so just check the website and they'll be up there as soon as
possible. Oh, so this is, you just have kind of a flexible interview.
I haven't had a whole lot of time lately, but yeah. So this has been a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, again, I want to thank you too, and good night. And again, thanks again.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Uh huh. Bye.
Bye.